Hello. So thank you for staying after Joe Ito's exciting talk. And first of all, sorry for my bad English and my even worse Italian accent. Sorry. I'd like to thank Joy Ito, of course, because he made me a great presentation. Now I know that he won't communicate with me anymore after this SMS, which put him on the blacklist. But anyway, thanks, Joy. I don't know where are you, but I'm very happy that you made this great presentation about my speech. And also, thank you, Joy, because one of the topics that you spoke about in your talk, I think would be really helpful for me to talk about these other topics I'm going to talk about. The idea you were talking about to switch the media is very important, because I'm going to talk about some very old-fashioned media, which is television. And for this reason, also, I want to thank the organization, because for me, it's a pleasure to be here. First of all, because Chaos Computer Club, it's a kind of legend in my mind. I would never dreamt to be here as a speaker. And secondly, because this is a great opportunity for somebody like me who works in a completely different domain to speak to a larger audience like you are today, and not a specialistic audience, which means that normally I'm used to talk to less people, like 30, and that's why I'm scared also, so please forgive me. And audiences that are more are closer to this topic. So maybe sometimes, you know, it's like when you talk to academy people and you share some words and some facts and you don't need to explain. So thanks, because this is an opportunity to for me also to be understood by people that are, I am not used to talk about Arab media. So first of all, I'd like to say three things. One is who I am. Yes, a little presentation, because it happened that I was just a mass media student in Italian university, and because I was very lucky, I had the chance to go to Palestine 12 years ago with a journalist from Italian radio, and it happened that I started to be interested in the Arab culture, and it was kind of, you know, love at first sight, let's say. And I soon discovered that the media was a really important part of Arab culture. That's why it came into my mind to begin to study this subject. Even if I come from, as I said, mass communication studies, which is not, you know, Arabic studies or Islamic studies. So my background is mostly sociology, anthropology, and then I started to study Arabic and Arab culture, Quran, Islamic law, and these kind of things. And currently I work for an independent newspaper in Italy called Il Manifesto. It's independent daily news. And I write about this issue, which is Arab media, which happens to be now kind of mainstream. But before, when we started, it was more than underground. My professor at the university, when I proposed him a thesis about Arab satellite station, he told me, oh, do they even have a television in the Middle East? So, which gives you, you know, the mood of 10 years ago. Anyway, now I'm preparing an art exhibition for Barcelona Contemporary Art Museum, which will be held in end of May 2005. And actually, it's an exhibition which deals about how the West and the Western cultures are portrayed into the Arab world. And I have the honor to be in charge of the video and TV section, because it's a larger exhibition which will be held in the museum with the paintings also, and very different stuff. But anyway, I'm preparing this. If anybody is from Barcelona or it has the, he has the chance to be there, I'm sure it will be interesting because we are selecting all the programs from news to entertainment coming from Arab countries and translating into English. And they are very interesting programs because they are showing how the Arab cultures portrays the West. I use this term, the West, which is an absolutely abstract term, but please forgive me, but I want to mean, you know, US culture, Italian, Spanish, and mostly US and Europe. So basically, so first point, who am I? Okay, you know it now. Second is why I speak about television. I speak about television in the Arab world because it happens to be a very important media in Arab culture. If you had the chance to go to any Arab countries, to any big cities in the Arab world, you will suddenly know that it is very important because, believe me, in Cairo, one of the biggest cities in the Arab world and in the whole world, there is a cemetery where people live on the graves, and there are TV screens on the graves. And every village or, you know, big cities from Tunis to Cairo to Dubai, you can see it quite clearly that television is important because it's plenty of satellite dishes, more than anything. Even I saw in Cairo some areas called informal quarters, which, I mean, doesn't have anything. They don't have water, lights, but it made it possible to have television screens. I don't know how. So anyway, it's clearly a very important medium in the Arab culture. That's why I'm focusing on Arab on TV station. I don't want to say that other media like radio or now the internet are not important, but compared to television, you know, the balance is for the moment in favor of television. So even if it's an old-fashioned tool in the West, maybe there is still working very well. And the third thing, I will speak about TV in which way. This is very important because I don't make content analysis, which means you won't hear in this session any comments about single programs. I brought something to show you, but it's related to my speech. I don't want to analyze every program that you have in TV station. It's not my approach to this subject. My approach instead is to study how the structure, how the financial and political and geopolitical factor element does have an influence on the contents. So it's kind of shifting the approach. So I will speak about content, but always related to, you know, financial, money, and politics, which is very important, actually, not only in the Arab world. So after this, I'd like to divide my speech in two parts. Let's say first part, it's pre-Gulf War, and second part is after Gulf War. Why? Because Gulf War, I mean 91 Gulf War, it's really considered to be a turning point in the history of Arab media. It is also a turning point in many things happening in the region, but in this field particularly, it's really, you know, a shifting of paradigm in Arab television. So what we have before Gulf War in the Arab countries, we have, of course, television. Now, when I say Arab countries, it's, you know, a general term like the West, because Arab countries are many, and they have so many differences that they can put together. I can't put them together. But general, we can, if we study the structure and the history of Earthian terrestrial television before the Gulf War, we could find some elements in common between different countries. This element is the standard model of the TV networks in the Arab world. It used to be state monopoly for two reasons. First of all, because television was imported media, let's say, from UK and France, I mean, from the colonial regime that were ruling the Arab countries that period. I'm speaking about 50s and the 60s, depends on which country, because television didn't start the same period in every Arab countries. There are some countries it started in the 50s, other countries it started in the 70s. So I am speaking now in this period, 50s, beginning of 70s. So first thing, why is a state monopoly? Because it's an import from British or French government, which was pushing the domestic regimes to open TV stations. So since that period, the UK and France did know this model, which was a state monopoly. They didn't have any private competition. That's why Arab TV stations are designed very similar to European station. And the second reason to have this model of state monopoly in terrestrial television is because a state monopoly does permit to have two very important things for Arab states, which are control of contents and censorship, of course. And the second term, censorship, they want to keep censorship on everything, the control on everything, but censorship on three very delicate issues and topics, which are, first of all, sex, as you can imagine. Sex, it was a taboo in the 50s everywhere, also in Italy, but of course in Arab countries it depends from the country, so you can have a wider range. In some countries you have you just kiss, they wouldn't cut the kiss. In other countries like Saudi Arabia, much more conservative. If you weren't, for example, husband and wife in real life, you couldn't act in a fiction to be husband and wife, which is crazy, I know, but it was this kind of thing. But I repeat, it's not the same. It depends. Egypt was very open, and there are great movies, which I can call now also soft porn, in a way, very erotic. So anyway, sex was the first taboo. Second one was religion, of course. I don't have to explain this because, of course, you couldn't touch religion and say something against God or Islam and blah, blah. And the third one, which is the most important, believe me, it's not sex or religion the most important, even if the West maybe has focused too much on this one and two factor. The most important factor is politics, of course, which was really a taboo. And I tell you why, two reasons again. Because politics in that period was a taboo on a domestic scale, internal policy, and on regional scale. I tell you why. Domestic, of course, the first, you know, when you have this censorship about politics, the first domain which is touched by censorship is, of course, news. So the news bulletin in Arab TV station were something like protocol news. All the experts called protocol news, which means that they were, I don't know, they could last for 1 hour, maybe, without any cares about the schedule, what you have before, what you have first. They could be 5 minutes or 1 hour, depends. Depends on what? Depends on what the head of state or the prime minister do that day. For example, prime minister go to the hospital because he has to, you know, it's inaugurate opening of the hospital. Or prime minister in Libya goes to see his friend in, I don't know, Algeria. That's it. I mean, this was the model. All the TV news in the Arab countries were mostly designed, which means that basically the TV news were protocol and not real news. Because they couldn't touch, of course they couldn't host the opposition parties or any other voice which was against the regime. On a regional scale, vice versa, there was a kind of imperative, which is don't touch the Arab brother, please. Because, I don't know, in Italy, when the Democrats, Democrazia Cristiana was ruling the country, there was a kind of, the people used to say, please wash your dirty clothes in your house, don't wash it exteriorly. And that's it. I mean, this is the same happening in the Arab world. They said, basically, even if it's not like this, absolutely not like this, because I hate this Arab state, but I would call him brother in front of the rest of the world, in front of my people. I would show that we are friends, we share a common sense of brotherhood, and we are basically, we share the same values, culture, religion, and blah, blah. So it happened that you couldn't say anything about any Arab countries in the TV news and in any other, of course, TV programs. So these two taboo on a political scale lead to two paradoxes. These two paradoxes was that, first one, you have more US programs in Arab TV channels from the beginning till the late 80s. Why? I tell you why. Because, for example, you know all the US fiction, like they are structured episode. You have one episode, another episode, another episode. So you can easily cut one episode without cutting the whole series. So they could be able to select which episode of I Love Lucy, Bonanza, Dallas Dynasty, and blah, blah, to broadcast. And the World Series was, they could broadcast the World Series without one or two episodes, it doesn't matter. Otherwise, Egyptian fiction, for example, which was very important at the moment, and it is still important in the Arab world, as this kind of structure, which is doesn't finish. It's like 2000 nights. Every single episode comes into the following, so you can't cut, basically. So this is one of the reasons why the US programs were very well known and very much imported into Arab channels until late 80s. Also because you can imagine that US products were not speaking about regional politics. They wouldn't touch, you know, the Arab cultures and values. They were speaking about love, money, Hollywood. So Arab regimes were very satisfied about this. And the second paradox about the TV news, about this censorship taboo, was that in TV news in the Arab world, you had more international news than local news. For example, it is weird, but you could have news about, I don't know, earthquake in Italy, instead of news about civil war in Lebanon, because you could touch Italy as a subject, but you couldn't touch Lebanon. And another consequences was that internal, and for internal I mean domestic news, was reported only by international station, like for example BBC or Voice of America, which is a paradox, because when, for example, civil war in Lebanon broke up, people in Lebanon didn't know that what was happening through their TV network, but they knew through the BBC, which is weird. And also, when Gulf War in 91 broke up, when Iraq, not before the Gulf War, but when Iraq invaded Kuwait, Saudi Arabian Television, which is one of the neighbor countries of Kuwait and Iraq, they didn't give the news for 3 days. I mean, it is weird, but it happened in the Arab station. So the people were informed of what was happening by international English news channels. So this is what was happening in Arab channels basically before the Gulf War. So why things have changed after the Gulf War? Why Gulf War is so important in the reshaping of TV news in the Arab world? Sorry. Basically, the first answer is because of satellite technology. Technology was widespread in that period, and you could easily imagine that even if there were something called like a dish ban, the satellite dish was forbidden in some countries like Saudi Arabia by law, you couldn't stop it. It's like the internet, you couldn't stop. So government and the state broadcasters to face a problem, a really important problem, how we deal with our audience, because our audience now is escaping the domestic screen, and our audience is going towards Western screens through the satellite. This is the first very important issue that Gulf War was, you know, forcing the Arab state to deal with. And the other issue was that basically the Western satellite channels were creating, let's call it, a cultural problem in the Arab countries, which is that you can easily imagine that first time that MTV arrived in, you know, in the Arab world, it was, you know, for them, at the beginning, it was too much entertaining, and maybe it was not, it didn't fit the cultural standards, let's say. So suddenly, the Arab state, they had two problems. How they keep their audience inside and not outside, how they create an answer, a local answer to the Western channels, because they didn't have any defense to these Western channels. And suddenly, the answer to this question was another time, was technology, was satellite. So basically, satellite, they started to establish a satellite station not in the Middle East, because the law that you had in the Middle East was very strict about entertainment and stuff. But they started to build what now we call the Pan-Arab networks in Europe. For example, at the beginning of the 90s, we see the launching of three new big Pan-Arab channels, Orbit, NBC, and ART. They share three important elements. First, they are in Europe and not in the Middle East. They are, one is in London, the other two in Italy. Second thing that they share, they are paid by Saudi Arabia, which means that Saudi princes and cousins, all the capital that are linked to the royal family in Saudi Arabia is giving money to do this. And the third element is that they can't do this, as I told you, in the Middle East, so they went outside. And the last element is that they aim to a wider audience, which is, okay, we don't aim to our domestic audience, but we decide to be Pan-Arab, which means we will address our contents to the region and to diaspora. Because in that period, you have all these immigrants going abroad in Europe and the US. So you have basically a new target, which was Arab communities abroad. So this factor was shaping these new Pan-Arab channels. But what was the point which was very weak in this project? Okay, they have money, of course, because Saudi Arabia has a lot of money. They had the law, because they were outside the Middle East, so they could basically do everything, because they were licensed by British government or Italian government, so they will act as a European TV station. But what they lack was the contents. They had money, technology, but they didn't have the contents, which means that still their capital, their money, was linked to the Saudi Arabia, which means that even if they have a news project, like, for example, NBC at the starting point, they had a news, very good news project. They had a correspondent everywhere, also in, you know, in Jerusalem and everywhere in the world. But this project, which had the money and the potentiality of the professional and everything, failed, because still the news were really very censored. And even if these networks were abroad, they couldn't say anything against Saudi Arabia or touch, as I told you, this Arab Brotherhood. So again, for example, this thing is very evident in the story. If you take the story of Orbit, Orbit is a big Arab distributor financed by Saudi Arabia. And is based in Rome currently, but is going back to Bahrain. So anyway, they had a project to start a news channel with the BBC. So they basically hired all the very professional BBC guys. And they started to work together because they wanted to add to their bouquet a new channel, which is a kind of Al Jazeera, but before Al Jazeera. But this project failed in a few months because the BBC Arabic Service, you can imagine that they have the same style as BBC, which is fair, balanced, and blah, blah. So they wanted to show, you know, an episode of a program, a documentary, about death penalty in Saudi Arabia. And this caused a great scandal. And, of course, Orbit fired everybody. And so the project of this channel suddenly was dying for this. So this is what happened before Al Jazeera. Then Al Jazeera came just, you know, a few years after this Orbit BBC things. And it was a boom, suddenly. In 96, it was a boom, even before Al Jazeera arrived in the West. It was a boom for many reasons, but the most important is that the taboo I spoke to you about, which is this Arab brotherhood, was suddenly broken. Because Al Jazeera decided to do editorial policy, which was based on opinion and counter-opinion, they call it, is their slogan. And suddenly you started to see to Al Jazeera TV screen, you started to see the opposition to the regimes. They would call, for example, Bahrain opposition, Tunisia opposition. They call it the left opposition, the right opposition, the Islamic opposition. They call it everybody to go in their talk show and talk in a very free way, and which was, you know, believe me, a bomb for the Arab world. In fact, the first consequences of this policy was that was a political consequence, which is that Qatar, which is the state that was hosting Al Jazeera, because it happens that Al Jazeera is a Qatari TV station, commercial one, but is the terms commercial in Arab media is quite ambiguous, in the sense that its statement is a private, but is still financed by the Emir of Qatar, so it's a kind of mixture between the public and private. Anyway, as I told you before, the consequences of this Al Jazeera spreading was that basically the Emir of Qatar were the political relationship between Qatar and other Arab states were suddenly broken. Al Jazeera caused to Qatar more than 500 breaking of diplomatic relationship. And it also caused the shifting of a balance in the Gulf geopolicy, because Saudi Arabia, as you can imagine, before was very important, was the leading country, was the first partner of US and was really leading the policy in the Gulf. But also because of Al Jazeera, Qatar gained a position, and probably you know that 1 year ago the US closed its military base in Saudi Arabia and put them to Qatar, near to Al Jazeera bureau, which is quite weird, I mean. Anyway, this is the consequences that the Al Jazeera phenomenon led to on a political scale and in the region. But there are also financial consequences of their editorial policy. Financial consequences, I mean that, for example, as I told you, Al Jazeera is a commercial station, but they face a kind of embargo, because all the advertising money coming from is coming from Saudi Arabia, and you can imagine that Saudi Arabia is not very happy about editorial policy of Al Jazeera, so they wouldn't put money in Al Jazeera. So this is a financial problem for Al Jazeera. But suddenly there was the most important consequence, was a cultural one, which means that from the point that Al Jazeera came out, a process that was underneath in the Arab world was suddenly coming on the edge. Let's say that Al Jazeera is kind of the edge of an iceberg, of a cultural process, which was already happening in the Arab world. And it also has another very important implication, which is that all the news channel coming after Al Jazeera and also all the people attitude in front of news channel in terms of freedom of expression would change forever, because news can be the same after Al Jazeera, because they showed one opinion, the other opinion. People started to talk more freely through their screens. So, for example, when Al Arabiya, the main competitor of Al Jazeera, came out, Al Arabiya, even if it's financed by Saudi Arabia also, because it's a sister company of NBC, a big pan-Arab entertainment giant, even if the money is Saudi, still, they couldn't. I mean, Al Jazeera has reached the point, and you couldn't go, you couldn't come back to the past. I mean, now you just can't stay at this point if you don't want to go too further, or you can progress, but you can't go far in the past, you can't go back to the past. That's why I would like to show you something. It's a kind of VHS that. I'm sorry, I hope it will work. It's from Al Arabiya, or from a sister company of Al Arabiya, which is a documentary house. And it shows a debate which before Al Jazeera times would then never be possible on Arab TV screen. Please, if you can run the tape.
معقولة هذه خربعين تدريبة وعساس انه قصفوا الجسر والصحاب حكى انه نحن قصفنا الجسر وحصرناه معقولة هذه عم نسمع اولا انه العراق ما بينكسر العراق باذن الله ما بينكسر لانه الله سبحانه وتعالى وينه الله مع المسلمين كون علنا مثل ما اعلن بوش انه هو حرب صليبية نحن الله مع المسلمين رب العالمين مع المسلمين بإذن الله منصورين وبإذن الله منصورين
بدنا حقوق الكراد يعني بدنا مثل ما الشعوب عنده كل واحد عنده مثلا شيء نطلب كمان نكون عندنا شيء مثل مدارس مثل جامعات مثل أي ما يكون عمل شيء كتير شيء ناس تحت الجرافات تحت الدبابات كان يجر وراهم يدعس عليهم يا بدك تسب برزاني يا كان يدعس عليهم كان هيك يصير بالعراق وحلبشة 75,000 عنسان راح عم بقولوا 5,000 75 عالم راح اطفال ونسوان وشيوخ والكل بعد النبال ما بعرف شو مواد كيماوية ضربوا حرقهم كلهم ناس عم بقولوا 5,000 75,000 انسان راح مش خمسة
طبعا نحن مع صدام شعب مسلم نحن ما بنتركه
لازم كان مثل ما شنق العالم مثل ما دبح العالم مثل ما نيم العالم كان لازم يعملوا فيه فرجوا للعالم
ضاعت العراق
ما بدي اياه شيء ان شاء الله باذن الله ان شاء الله بكون بيتفقوا ان شاء الله بكون بيصير يد واحده ها
ضاعت وزياده
ان شاء الله ما بدي
ضاعت وزياده
ان شاء الله ما بدي
كنت تعبي تانك البنزين بدولار او ببلاش كانت الدوله تاخذها تاكس من غير شيء بالضرائب هلا امريكا عندها امريكا بحاجه لفيول وعندها نقص صارت هلا بتاخذهم من وين من العراق
هلا انا بايد امريكا أنا ما بأيد صدام حسين بأيد شعب الله ليش؟ إن شعب هي طلع غلط أول شيء وآخر شيء طلع مزبوط عم يشتوي يشتوي
ليك أنا قلت كلمة وأنا موجود هي الكاميرا عم تصورني فلسطين بدها تصير بالعراق والكراد بدها تصير لهم دولة بالعراق والعراقية حيصير له النص والنص برا، وفلسطين حتصير كلها اسرائيل
ان شاء الله. ما
وانت قد بالعمر بثلاث مرات، اذا ما صار هيك يبقى انا
ان شاء الله ما بصير الشيء هذا. ان شاء الله بصير، بتفقوا بصيروا كتله واحده، بصير كلهم كلنا اسلام وكلنا اخوه، وان شاء الله ما
صار في تفرقه بالاسلام
نفسه. ان شاء الله ما راح يصير
في تفرقه طائفيه،
ان شاء الله ما راح يوصل الشيء هذا.
بكره بنذكر بعض.
هيدا فيلم امريكي مركب انا وانت عم نشوفه، بس مين اللي اكله؟ اللي اكل الفقير يلي مدعوس على راسه هو اللي اكله. ولا الحكام شو جاي الحاكم؟ شفت مقصور تبعونه؟ شفت كم قصر عنده؟ كمية قصر؟ أيه. وين الشعب اللي كان عم بيموت من الجوع؟ انا التقيت باكثر من عائله هون بلبنان. بتعرف شو؟ بتعرف كيف كان عم بيناموا؟ كل 10 12 شخص عم بيناموا باوضه واحده، عراقيين باوضه واحده. انا شايفهم، انا زايرهم. عم تقول لي صدق؟ لا، امريكا ارحم من صدام بهالحاله. صدق اللي عم بيدبح شعبه. لا صدق،
الله ينصرك يا صدام يا رب، الله ينصرك يا صدام.
ليش وقت اللي عملوا فينا ما حدا حكى ولا كلمه؟ ليه
لك يا عمي؟ علنا عينك
بنت عينك 70,000 مو خمسه راح
ملايين عينك بنت عينك. امريكا وبريطانيا اليوم عم يقتلوا بعضهم على شو اسمه غنم الحرب. شو عم تحكي انت؟
بيغنوا بالحرب شو مالنا فيه؟
واللي ما بيعرف يعرف انه العراق اكثر شيء بالعالم عندها بترول. شو عم تحكي انت؟ امريكا عندها نقص بترول، بدها بترول. من وين بتجيبه؟ من عندك؟
ومحطه.
ايه بلا صح.
ايه معصب.
ثانك يو ثانك يو. سو This was just to show you that a kind of debate like this, showing different points of view, supporting Saddam, supporting the US, would never be possible before, you know, on Arab TV screen. And now I must say that most of the Arab news channels does host debate like this. They go and interview people on the streets. So what I want to say, just to end my speech and maybe ask if you have some question, and it's that Al Jazeera has paved the way. It was not, the responsible for doing this, but it's a good factor which paved the way for this open debate and this creation of a public debate, open debate that is started now in the Arab world couldn't be stopped. So this is very important on a regional scale. On the other side, I'd like to end with a consideration on a larger scale, which is a global scale, because there is one very important consequences on the global scale about the spreading of Al Jazeera, which is that there is no longer a one-way street flow of information as it used to be in the 80s, for example. If you remember all the UNESCO reports and non-aligned movement claiming for this kind of new international communication order, they used to say that in the 80s there used to be the US and then Europe acting like a center of communication, feeding up the periphery, like the Arab world, India and the other states. And now I think it's no longer the case, because Al Jazeera is the first global player, global news station and provider, which is not Western. And also it's in Arabic, it's not in English. So it's a huge achievement. And I think from a neutral, very neutral point of view, this is a very important point, because we don't have any longer these media theories about media imperialism. Because Al Jazeera is a voice coming from another part of the world. So this is a good news, I think. But given this fact that now we have some other global players coming from other countries, we should keep in our mind one very important thing, which is about freedom of expression. And this important thing is that freedom of expression doesn't have a double standard, which means that now we can't say that freedom of expression is our domain, is Western people, Western countries, because we have other, voices. And these voices can't be stopped. I mean, I find personally absurd that Al Jazeera has been prevented to work in Iraq, because the government says that Al Jazeera is spreading violence and terrorism. They are doing news. I mean, it's against this our Western statement of freedom of expression. I also find very absurd that a Lebanese TV station, this is happening these days, a Lebanese station which is named Al Manar, which is the Hezbollah party station, now is in the US terrorist list. They will consider this station as a terrorist. It's an international organization of terrorism, which is quite, you know, also Reporters Sans Frontières has condemned this act because it's very dangerous. When you use double standards about freedom of expression, I do agree with Joy when he says that if we allow freedom of expression, there is a bottom line. I mean, we have to accept the bad, the good, and let every voice speak, and then judge maybe. Thank you. And so I don't know if you have some question or we just go to dinner.
Hello, can I ask a question?
Your video, it comes from the Corniche from Beirut, but why did you choose Beirut? Because especially Beirut or Lebanon is not presenting a picture of the other Arabic countries because it's mixed 40% Christians, 40% Arabic Muslim, and something about 20% mixed Jews and so on. And I think it's this, especially this example at the Corniche, is not very good for the other parts for the Arabic countries. If you go to Syria, for example, or to Jordan or to Iran, you will never get a video like this and all these different meanings from the people. I know a little bit about that because I was living in Beirut for half a year.
Thanks. You're right, Beirut and Lebanon in general is very different country, very open, and it does allow more than freedom of expression because they have a tradition. But I showed this because it's Al Arabiya. I mean that this comes from Lebanon, but it's shown on a Pan-Arab network, which is paid by Saudi Arabia. This is very important because this excerpt goes to every Arab houses. So it's not important where it comes from, but it's important where it arrives. Okay. And this arrives everywhere in the Arab world.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. In 91, CNN was a... Yes, Amir. In 91, CNN was the first, the only channel in Iraq. And Al Jazeera came after. And Al Jazeera was bombed by the U.S. Army in Afghanistan by mistake or, you know, by other purpose. It's happened several times. But today there is new channel, as you said, like from Saudi Arabia, Qatar have Al Jazeera, and U.S. have its own channel where they choose journalists with specific profile and specific information to give. For you, what is the strategic impact of those channels? There is a bidirectional message to give. I mean, it's not a message only for the population from Middle East, but it's a message from the population from Occident, which is looking to this those channel. What is your opinion? And do you think, like, today, channel like Fox News in US are not exactly similar than those channel we were talking about?
Yes, so the final part of your question, I do definitely agree. I mean, there are some very militant, let's call it militant, TV station in the West, like Fox News, which calls, for example, the U.S. troops our heroes or our troops, which is basically, I mean, the same that some Arab station do with their supporting party. So I do agree. And the first part of your question, I don't understand if you are asking me about Al Hurra, the U.S. TV station. I don't, yeah. There are now some many studies that have been done in Arab University about the reaching and the success of Al Hurra, which is the U.S.-based Arabic channel. And basically, they show that it is a propaganda. Personally, I saw some programs from Al Hurra. It makes me feel very sick because the first day they opened the station, which was a Valentine day, they started to broadcast, you know, some stupid promos like you have a horse, there is a closed window, and the horse, which is happens to be white, blue, and red, like a star and stripes, comes through the window and opens the window. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's a kind of propaganda. And I think that Al Hurra or other news channel which will come on the same model of Al Hurra are not, will not reach the Arab audiences. It's very different from, for example, Voice of America, because Voice of America also used to be, it is still, you know, issued by the government, but it has a tradition. They started very early, and it was not, you know, so aggressive propaganda. But Al Hurra really, I don't believe it will be so successful there.
You mentioned two national news sources, but you didn't mention exactly where the regional news would necessarily come from. How does this change in national news affected regional sources as far as the accuracy of the news and how much of it is real reporting of events and facts versus opinion? One of the things you see a lot of nowadays is most of the news programs getting eaten up by opinion, counter-opinion, things that aren't really news, hot topics, but there's important things going on that people aren't aware of, local politics. Mm-hmm. So are there affiliates to Al Jazeera, or are there newspapers that cover most of the local news for towns and things like that?
On the, if I did understand the question, because I'm not sure I did, because I was looking for you and I got some confused. Anyway, are you asking if Al Jazeera have some other, I mean, I just mentioned Al Jazeera, Al Arabiya, the most important players, but you want to know if there are any other sources of...
More locally, specific for...
Sorry,
local
can you
areas,
speak...
local news.
In the...
Local news for a specific area, and how those were affected by the national change in media, the change after the Gulf War.
Okay, that's a good question. No, I think now this kind of freedom of expression and policy of opinion and counter-opinion is just in the satellite pan-Arab players. Because the state television, which is the terrestrial one, it's still very, not very conservative as it used to be in the past, but it still maintains a degree of control into the broadcast. So, but the problem is that in the Middle East, the terrestrial channels are named local channels, are not important. I mean, the really big player, TV player in the Middle East, it's a satellite television, it's not terrestrial anymore. So it is important that it starts from the satellite. And on a print level, I don't think there is all this, you know, debate, except from some countries like Lebanon, but Lebanon has a long tradition of freedom.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I got another question. I was wondering what had to happen before Al Jazeera rose. I mean, you said that media was strictly controlled, but the regime of Qatar let this happen. So what gain does the regime have? Why did this happen politically?
Yeah, very good question. Indeed, we have, I don't know how many minutes. It's a very difficult question because you have to watch the policy of the state of Qatar in the Gulf as a political player in the Gulf to understand Al Jazeera policy. In Qatar, there was a coup d'etat, a golpe, I don't know the English word anyway. There was a changing of regime, but we call it a white changing of regime, which means that the father of the emir, of the present emir of Qatar, was in on his way on with Switzerland, I think, and his son just took the power. So it was a change of regime, which in no violent way, which paved the way to a very different policy. For example, Qatar has, you know, prepared the election, now is preparing a constitution and The Qatar regime is, you know, it's a monarchy, still a monarchy, but they are preparing a parliamentary election. And I think that suddenly Qatar recognized, which was a state which completely didn't exist before. If you told somebody 10 years ago, where is Qatar? Everybody would say, I don't know. I mean, even in the Arab world, because it's a tiny state, less than 1 million people living there, and 80% of the population, it's immigrants, you know. So it's a very particular country. But I think that, just to be short, because it's a very complicated question to answer, Qatar understand that they had to open their policy before, because they didn't want to do like Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia now is in a very dangerous situation because they didn't open their policy, so they are attacked by the interior opposition, the Islamic opposition, and they are losing their alliance with the US. So, you know, I think that Qatar is a kind of trying to propose a democratic model in the Gulf, using Al Jazeera as a, let's say, marketing tool also. And it's quite successful also in doing this. And I think they want to be a candidate to have a leadership there in a more open way. That's it.
Thank you.
Hello. Just one question. I think we all agree there are different interpretations of the word freedom. It's always the freedom of you who's speaking against freedom of other people. So there are some different interpretations. This also applies, I think, to freedom of speech. So to come to the point, I wonder what makes you think that the broadcasts of, for example, Al-Manar, which was recently forbidden to be broadcasted in France, I wonder what makes you think that the broadcasts of Al-Manar, especially those broadcasts from Hezbollah calling for the killing of Jews, make for any better freedom or democracy for anybody?
Okay, that's a good question. We don't have time, but anyway, come here and we discuss. But I just want to say that in democratic country, like my country, I have one party which is represented in the parliament, is ruling now actually, Fascist Party, and Lega Nord, which is a separatist movement, and they have newspaper and television, and they say Islam, it's not superior to us. They are, you know, they say bad thing and very racist things against, they are all terrorists and stuff. So I think you are right, but maybe also in Western so-called democracy, like Italy, we do have these problems. So as a personally, I wouldn't like to hear this, but I just don't watch this kind of television. Anyway, thank you very much. I have to finish because of other people speaking. Thanks.